soft infested song. Me and Terry became friends, trying in vain to breathe the fire. We were born catching rides from the outskirts, tying fate between our teeth, sleeping in that old abandoned beach house, getting wasted in the heat. Stockton's way, where desperate lovers park. We sat with the last of the Duke Street kings, huddled in our cars, waiting for the bell to ring. In the deep heart of the night, the sun is loose from everything.
I don't know. outside, inside, wherever you may be.
From the box set, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band Live, 1975 to 1985. Welcome back. It's another edition. Do you know which edition this is?
17, if I had to guess. 17 or 18.
The Melnick and Murphy Podcast. Thank you, Alan Hodgson, CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side.
It's episode 18. And they're
flying by.
That was, thank you very much, Lauren Rubin of Paramount Financial Services, because we honestly would not keep going without the help of Lauren. And I know I keep promising this, but we do have people in the queue waiting to take off and join us. It's just a question of having the time to sit down and arrange everything. But Lauren Rubin, Paramount, when I say Lauren Rubin, what do you think of?
I think of someone with great comedic wit.
He should do open mic.
He should. You mean open mic comedy or open mic?
Yeah, open mic comedy.
Okay. Yeah, he could. He could bust over five minutes.
Lauren's very funny.
Yeah, I just know Lauren through you, so he's just he's a good fella. He's a
Paramount
regular guy.
I don't know about a good fella.
No, I didn't mean it like that. Why are you always going to mob things up?
Paramount Financial Services, mob free. 514-905-0885, 514-905-0885. What Lauren does is take care of your money, and it's all a very common sense approach, and he's very, very easy to communicate with, and we appreciate the fact that he helps us keep this podcast going. That song, Backstreets, as you can tell, I've lost my voice. Sean Campbell at TSN 690 was supposed to be calling the Montreal Canadiens game in Buffalo, very much looking forward to replacing Dan Robertson, who was doing some TV work, and Sean lost his voice. So it is spreading through the TSN 690 studio and beyond. So
thanks for sharing.
I'm right behind Sean, so you're going to have to carry a lot of this, the spoken word aspect of our podcast here.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Bruce Springsteen live?
Never.
Did you never have the desire to?
Yeah, when was the last time you played?
It's been over 10 years. 2008 at the Bell Center,
And before that would be?
I would say 5 or 6 years earlier than that. I really, 2004. It's every time I've mentioned it to the people I know at Evenco, they always use scheduling conflict as a reason. But it's disturbing to longtime Springsteen fans that we have to go out of town to watch the greatest show.
To some of the big acts, I guess Montreal is.
They'd rather do a second night somewhere else.
Toronto.
New York, Philly, Boston, whatever. But here, I just don't understand it. I think there was a genuine attempt to bring him in his last couple of tours, but the Canadians in the playoffs, I don't know. It's just, it's not right. And who knows if we'll ever see him again here. He's been doing this Broadway thing for most of the year plus, which is coming to an end. And so in the meantime, nice segue into the fact that Billy Bob Productions is throwing our first, what we hope will be an annual event, our Christmas
party. First of many.
And it is taking place on Friday, November 30th at the Fairmont Theater. And Tommy Youngstein will be performing live music, the very best of the Bruce Springsteen catalog. So look, it's not the E Street Band, but as Shane will explain, these are very, very accomplished musicians, indie musicians in this country, some from Montreal, some from Toronto, and some from in between Montreal and Toronto, and they really kick it on stage, and it's cool without a Springsteen show in Montreal to have his songs come alive in this manner with such passion and commitment from the musicians. It's a great night.
An all-star team, if you will. You got Josh Traeger, Between the Pipes, from the Sam Roberts Band. You got Alan Snoddy, who's fronting the band, was the ex-guitarist from the Stars. You have Jeff Heischholt, who's the B3 player, organ player for the Trues. We have, who else? You got Greg
Paquette.
Paquette, fantastic guitar player, ex-guitar player of the Stills. And I think those are the four. And then Well, he's got a roster.
He's got a rotating group of people that come in and out depending on what city he's playing in. But there should be about 10 people on stage last time.
I think eight or nine piece band, yeah.
And prior to that, and he's playing the very, very best of Springsteen, plus a very special Motown Christmas tribute. And opening up is Bilal Butt, and Bilal's starting to get active again. He's got a soul group with him, soul revival group.
The Soul Revivers.
That's who it is, right? Yeah. And he's got like a nine-piece band, including mm-hmm. somebody you know is pretty well singing backup. By the time this is heard, she will have launched her first CD, Tanya.
Tanya E, yeah. Part of the Montreal music scene. Great R&B soul singer. And she's releasing her first album. So it's at Rosewood, actually.
So she's going to be on stage singing backup with Bilal, and he's got a full horn section. He's going to be ripping through some classics. And
Sean Mercer.
Jerry Mercer's son.
He's going to be on the kit. Andrew Sudzy, as we affectionately call him, on bass. And it's going
to
be great.
And everybody who has a ticket, who walks in with a ticket, those of you on the guest list, you're going to have to buy your own beer. But anybody who has bought a ticket, when you walk in, you get a free beer as our thanks. A token of appreciation for supporting Billy Bob Productions through what was a pretty pretty good 2018.
Busy.
And it's going to be a crazy night.
How many did we do?
We did the Southern Soul in April. We did the Tony Marinaro, Is This a Joke Roast in September. We did Andrea twice in the last year.
Right.
And we did Dan Byrne going back to last year. And we did Tommy Youngstein doing the Tom Petty tribute after Tom died in Turbo House in St. Henry.
When was that? February?
That was last February.
Yeah. 2018.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're flying by, Mitchell.
So here we go. This is it for Billy Bob Productions for at least a little while. I think the next thing we do might be with this big guy right here, and then a major event that's in the very early planning stages for December of 2019. We hope at the Corona Theater, but stay tuned for that. But Springsteen Live, honestly, Shane, like now he's, what is he, 70? He's pushing
68.
70. So he doesn't move around the way he used to, and I always felt a little cheated that I never got to see James Brown live because I grew up hearing the legendary stories of what it was like to see James Brown live. But Springsteen live was just, nobody could match it.
Shows, too.
I left early. A lot of the shows that I went to, I had enough, like 2.5-3 hours. I said, that's enough. Thank you. But it was therapeutic for him. He needed to get it out. And it was just like an old school rock and roll revival show featuring every musical genre and telling stories in between the songs that really connected. I'm not surprised that he's turned this Broadway thing into what he's done because he was always a great storyteller between songs, even back in the 70s and 80s.
Alan saw it. He said it was...
On Broadway?
Yeah. Went down and...
So pricey.
Yeah, but he's a Springsteen freak, but he said it was just amazing, just him and his guitar, and he said his command of the audience was unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal, yeah. I remember when Glory Days came out and Dancing in the Dark, those videos, like those, I was like 8 or 9.
Yeah. With
Courtney Cox. Dancing.
Coming out of the audience, yeah.
And I remember I was in grade 4, and we had a variety show in Verdun, St. Thomas More, and I did a lip sync to it, and
Dancing in the Dark.
Yeah, and my buddy who was in the band, it wasn't a real band. His dad had made these fake guitars out of plywood, and like had just cut out random shapes and had bolted down like pieces of twine to make it look like the strings. So we got up there and so I guess that was the first time
like karaoke.
Yeah, and I remember that the mic was on. And I remember that was the first time I ever sang on a mic.
That was your first Springsteen song.
And it was my first Springsteen song that I sang. I was like 9 or 8. And I remember my buddy was yelling at me from the side stage, "The mic is still on! Turn the mic off!" But I didn't care. I was like singing along with the lyrics. So, you know, the Springsteen bug.
What's your favorite?
Oh, man. Probably... I mean, the first one that I really connected with was first album was Born in the USA. And I didn't really get the lyrics, you know, how it was about Vietnam and the conflict and everything. I didn't really get it. But I think Glory Days was the first one that really hooked me in. So I have a soft spot for that album. You know, I do. I'm
going there are like I'm, seven I'm, singles off that.
Yeah,
album.
I'm doing. I'm going down. It was weird listening to it. Not that the lyrics are profane in some of them, but it's he's very clever in the way that he rides the line.
Yeah.
You know, hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all? You know, I didn't. As a kid, you're like, what, you know.
I'm on fire.
And then I came of age. I was like, oh, that's what he's talking about.
That was a good video. Driving up through the hills of L.A.
He's under the car and she walks in and all you see is the high heels. Yeah, I can get the car back by 7 or something. So pretty much anything off that album is what I really, and then I got into, you know, Born to Run. I really got into Nebraska, which isn't really the most feel-good
reason to believe. Reason to believe on Nebraska for me is, like, if you're going to list top 10 Springsteen songs, that would be on there. Actually, the one we started with, Backstreets to Me, when I had the original Born in the USA, Born to Run when I was in high school, and I kept playing. Well, I played the whole album to death, but specifically Backstreets, She's the One, and Thunder Road were the tracks I kept listening to over and over and over again. And to be able to see it live for the first time and hear it was special. So, again, we hope to see you on Friday, November 30th. It really is a tremendous night of music, and we're going to hang out, and it's a party. It's a Christmas party. Santa Claus is going to be there. And Springsteen has always gotten into the Christmas spirit over the years with his music. So,
will you be getting into the Christmas spirit, Mitchell?
I will be getting into the eggnog quite deeply for a Friday night. Absolutely.
Yeah, the mistletoe.
Best show, without question. Best show, like in parentheses, best rock and roll show by far. Like it would be Springsteen, 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 Springsteen. And then I got to think about the others. But you know, because
really?
Yes, but you know that we've talked about this many times. The best single set of music
I ever saw
was Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble. And he opened for Dire Straits. This was when Dire Straits was busting out MTV and all of that. And Elliot Price and I sat in Donald K. Donald and Ted Blackman's seats, front row center at the Montreal Forum. And Knopfler, I just remember the set by Stevie Ray Vaughan was unforgettable to me, the greatest I ever saw. But when Dire, and I love Mark Knopfler.
Great. Legend. Amazing.
But he had this second guitarist with him who was so fucking annoying. Like he was this tall, thin guy. And I don't know if it was because Stevie Ray Vaughan had been on, but he was just like, he seemed totally insecure and just like, these gyrations and this showboating that he was doing. It was just, I know it was an arena show, but I got really put off. And I think so did Knopfler because he fired him at the end of that tour. It didn't match who Mark Knopfler was. You know what I'm saying?
So the guy was showboating on stage.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible.
Did you know who the guy was?
No.
He must have been an amazing guitar player.
You could look it up. Oh, technically, he was a great guitar player, but he was just, after you see Stevie Ray Vaughan and then you see Mark Knopfler, I don't want to see this guy. You know what I mean?
But
I think
playing live
being in their shadow.
It's a funny thing. And the guitar is a funny instrument. Like, I'd say if you're a guitar slinger, let's say, not a rhythm player, but you're a slick guitar player, you got your stuff together, you know, out of, I'd say 7 out of 10 of guitar slingers, if you're sharing a stage with them, they'll try to cut your head. You know what I mean? You know what cutting heads is?
Over
guitar dueling.
Yeah.
Now, guitar players don't usually, I mean, there's certain examples, you know, Ron Wood, Keith Richards, you know, match made in heaven. But in my experience, you get on stage with a guitar, you know, you're a slinger, they're a slinger, it's, you know, you smile at each other and you shake hands at the beginning of the gig and it's all, hey, bro, good to see you, da-da-da. But you start subtly one-upping each other, trying to one-up each other. And it's weird. It's weird. It's a weird vibe.
Guitar necks are on the table.
Yeah. It's just, so maybe this guy saw Stevie Ray Vaughan and was trying to,
well,
know,
it just
insecure.
Ruined,
or
it really ruined the mood. And it was such a great night. And So I wish I could go back, and if somebody had has a tape, a bootleg, I'd love to hear that performance. The fact that we were sitting in the front row certainly added to the experience. So this is not from that night, but here is some Stevie Ray Vaughan from my favorite rock and roll club of all time, the Spectrum. You saw some shows at the Spectrum, I hope.
I opened for Steel Pulse. You know who Steel Pulse is?
No.
The reggae band from England. Grammy Award winning, great legends. Opened for them. I saw, did I see Daniel Lanois at the Spectrum?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
Daniel Lanois. And when you brought John Prine in, where was that?
Yes, that was at the Spectrum. So, okay. Proud of that show.
Man.
So proud of that. First people ever to ask John Prine to play Montreal was us, Billy Bob Productions, and it was jam-packed.
You know, it was great. I went with Mike.
It was a drunken crowd, but it was such a good vibe in there. It was tremendous.
Sam Stone came home. There's a hole in daddy's.
There were a lot of heavy-duty people in the crowd that night. Roy Dupuis, you know, the actor?
Sure.
Roy Dupuis was out there, and a lot of, I think every musician in town was there.
Lost Dogs and Mixed Blessings.
That's a good album, studio album.
Yeah. The Missing Years.
John Prine, Jesus, the Missing Years.
Yeah. Jesus, the Missing Years, yeah.
Yeah, great song. Great song.
I was like 23, and Mike slid this CD across the bar, Mikel, yeah, as he had so many others. And he's like, you ever heard of John Prine? And I was like, no. It was like 23, 24. He's like, check this cat out. And I was like, mind blown. So, yeah, Daniel Lanois, John Prine. Those are two pretty good ones.
And John Prine was in 2000, 2001, somewhere around there. Phenomenal night. So let's go back to the Spectrum, 1984. I was there. Listen closely, you'll hear me. This will be the first of a couple of tracks that you can hear me yelling and screaming on.
Montreal, please welcome once again from Austin, Texas, Stevie Ray Vaughan and Devil Trouble. I used to do. Lord, I want to know more. Things that I used to do. Lord, I want to know more. I used to sit around your window, darling, cry, baby, do not go. I used to search all night for you, darling. Lord, and my search would always end in vain. I used to search all night for you, darling. Lord, and my search would always end in vain. Yeah, but I knew all the time, darling, that you was hit out with that other man. Where's he at now, baby? Uh-huh.
your mama, darling. Lord, I'm going back to my family too. Say goodbye to your mama, darling. Lord, I'm going back to my family too. Lord, nothing I can do can please, darling. Oh, I just can't get along with you.
Want to go back home and practice. Not feeling so good about myself right now, Mitch. Not going to lie.
From the Spectrum, Spectrum de Montréal, 1984. That's part of a deluxe re-release of Couldn't Stand the Weather. They slapped that concert on, and it's. I always remembered him coming on stage, being introduced, and going right into Voodoo Child. And it was like, holy shit, he's doing this. Like this, 8 minutes of this right out of the gate, but actually now listening to it, I assume it's in sequence. He started with Testify, which is an instrumental, and then I think this is the third song in the concert. But normally I would stand at the bar on the right when I watched a show at the Spectrum, I'd say 80% of the time, but occasionally I'd go onto the floor and get this.
Was that your spot when you, yeah. Right side of the bar?
Yeah.
You annoyed if you went to shows and you couldn't stand there?
Yeah.
There were people there?
Very annoyed.
So you're one of those guys. OCD, you're giving some people the hard stare. You're like, why is this guy staring at me?
No, it's
true. Guy's in my spot. It's in my spot.
Actually, what the, wish I remember their names, but what the bartenders, barmaids would do when they saw me is clear room.
Because, excuse me.
Well, tipping helps, as you know.
Tipping is always a good idea.
So they appreciate it.
Then. Not just a city in China.
Yep.
As we say in the biz.
So on that particular night in 1984, I certainly was on the floor right in front of the stage, and it's just like, it blew me away. And then I got to see
Jimmy James opened for, I think Jimmy James opened for
I honestly show, no? don't remember. But that would make sense.
Yeah.
And then a short time later, I saw that set at the Forum. That was right around Dire Straits. I Want My MTV. You know, when the Dire Straits busted out.
Yeah. I think Steve Ray Vaughan changed the landscape for guitar players as much as Eddie Van Halen did in the late 70s.
It's just such a gut.
Yeah.
Gut, I mean, bucket.
But with such kinda. A, you know, when you hear Eddie Van Halen, you know that's Eddie Van Halen, and with Steve Ray Vaughan, for me, my generation guitar players, everybody was trying to sound like Steve Ray Vaughan. And
well, it's also his voice too. I mean, yeah. That's the underrated part of what he brought to the stage. His voice got me just as much as his guitar playing.
Intense.
Yeah. He was the whole package, and thankfully, at least he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And have you been to Austin?
Austin. You recorded
in
down there, yeah.
So recorded. You saw the statue of Steve? There's a big statue out there.
No, I played at the Continental Club, where he played many gigs. I didn't get to play at Antone's, but
it closed, huh?
Really? I just saw a post by Doyle Bramall II that he was doing a gig there not 2 weeks
He's
ago.
He's got a new album. You opened for him?
Yeah.
You opened for him at the Club Soda?
Yeah.
Right? I was in Cape Cod, but...
very cool. One of my favorites.
Doyle picked up, of course, the rhythm section, Double Trouble.
Right? Yeah, sure, with Charlie Sexton.
Archangels.
It all comes back down to, though? It all comes back to Bob Dylan with you, because you're about to say Charlie Sexton, and Charlie Sexton plays guitar in whose band?
Well, actually, I was planning to do that, but not. I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about why you think people who like the music that we play on this podcast should know or search out the Archangels.
Well, I mean, after Stevie Ray passed away, I can't assume what that must have been like. But Doyle Bramall Sr., who was a drummer, if I'm not mistaken, had written a lot of songs with Stevie Ray Vaughan. And Doyle Bramhall II met Stevie when he was like 8. And I think there's him telling stories about how Stevie Ray would get him on stage when he was like 15. Like, he'd just call him up and give him a guitar. And you're 15. I can't even begin to imagine what that's like. But no, I mean, these people are pillars of American music, Americana, blues, and, you know, the foundations of the music that we love. And Charlie Sexton, I got into with Archangels, and Doyle and Chris Layton and Tommy Shannon, who are the who was Double Trouble. And I think they released something like 3 albums. Plus, you gave me a live album.
Yeah.
And that was great. And then I really got into Charlie Sexton as a producer because I was tripping on Essence, which was a Lucinda Williams album, which got me into Lucinda Williams. And I was like, Charlie Sexton, I didn't really put 2 and 2 together. And I was like, oh, holy shit, this is the guy that did, you know, Archangels. And then a bit of a 180 playing with, you know, that sort of blues rock juggernaut that Archangels is and was, and all of a sudden you're playing, you know, you're Bob Dylan's lead guitar player. It's a bit of a bit of a jump, but he's an amazing musician. But yeah,
well, to this day he's still Dylan's lead guitarist. Dylan is about to begin a residency at the Beacon Theater in New York for a full week, and he's actually making a rare television appearance the night we are recording this on Jimmy Fallon on the Tonight Show.
Really?
I can't remember the last time he was on late night TV. It's been, I think, back in Letterman's era. But Dylan went through this heavy blues period, and he had Larry Campbell, who's an incredible instrumentalist.
Sure.
Plays everything. And Larry Campbell and Charlie Sexton were in the band together for a period of time. But which leads us, by the way, if you haven't figured it out, we're playing some of our favorite live tracks, and it's something we're going to come back to because there's just not enough time. I started picking out some of my music to bring in to play tonight, and I was up to like 42 CDs, and I said, okay, I just better leave here. So we'll do a part 2 and maybe a part 3 on this. But your good friend Andrew Tupper was visiting last weekend.
We had
the Andrea Ramelow show at Casa del Popolo, which was a lot of fun. You had a rare Saturday night off in Montreal.
Yeah, very strange. Very strange. And I always feel very, I don't know, I feel guilty and I feel full of anxiety because I just, you know, I play 50 out of 52 Saturdays a year. So, but it was nice to be able to come down and just enjoy a show. And She was fantastic.
She's doing her homage to Leonard Cohen and just a few blocks from where Leonard lived.
She just
lived.
Played Edmonton last night, and you can catch her on the gram at on Andrea Ramelow. And you know, their musicians were top notch, and the old bandmate came in from St. Catharines, Ontario. So we got into the grapes, and he kept on saying, you know, people move from Montreal, and he goes, "Why can't you get pizza here?" And this is, you know, late on into the evening, and we're well lubricated. And I remember we could get a piece of pizza on every corner. Why don't you get some pizza? I said, man, listen, let's just go home. Whatever. You know, I just really like a piece of pizza.
Did we both end up ordering from Angela's at like 4 in the morning?
You did not order from
Angela's. I did.
Did you?
Well,
we ordered B&M.
No, they weren't open.
They were.
Okay, here's the deal. This is probably why I lost my voice, even though Campbell at TSN also lost his voice. After the Andrea Ramelow show, Shane said, we're going to go down to Lowick,
mm-hmm.
and which is in my neighborhood. And I figured, okay, I'm going to have a nightcap and then just walk up to where I live, up on De Courcelle. And
have a nightcap.
And I walked in. This was a Saturday night after the concert. I had never been to Lowick. We've been to Lowick very often. We've had meetings there. It's a good spot. It's classy. It's well run. It's just a cool spot. But I had never been there on a Saturday night. My goodness.
Jammed.
Absolutely
sardines.
Jam-packed. And so I kind of did a double take. I was by far the oldest person in the room. And then,
no.
And then Mikey Griff dragged me. He said, just walk through the bar. I said, bartenders don't like this. He said, just follow me, walk through the bar. And he brought me to where you and Andrew were in the back of the bar. And I know we both tried to leave on a couple of occasions, and we couldn't. And
oh,
the
boy.
Thing is, the Canadians had played a hockey game that night. And I had to go to work. I had to watch the game, and I write a blog for The Athletic. So I ended up watching the game beginning at 3 o'clock in the morning on tape, and I hadn't eaten dinner. So I ended up ordering an Angelo's pizza at 4.
How good was it, though?
Not really.
Oh, come on. Even at that time in the night. Come on. You could have McCain Delicioso at that time. You're like, God damn. It's the best pizza I've ever had in my life. God damn it. Look at that. The cheese is all brown. Yeah, baby. It's the best pizza ever. Were you tipsy Saturday night? Don't answer that. It's on the record. We're recording right now. But
I gobbled up the Angelus. It
helps to soak up the the poison.
But then you eat a pizza. I had a whole medium pizza myself at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm watching the game. I got to sleep at like 6:30. It's the first all nighter I've pulled in I don't know how long.
I'm the opposite. I love that shit. Big pizza, crash about 4 slices, maybe a little poutine on the side, and then it's. So, Mr. Sandman, bring me out. It keeps you up?
I can't sleep on a stomach like that. Are you kidding?
Man, I remember Picasso's. I remember Picasso's was the best.
I only ordered breakfast at Picasso's.
Oh, man.
Even if it was like 4:30 in the morning, I'd order breakfast.
Poutine? No, they deliver till like 6 in the morning. Yeah.
Oh, I went to Picasso's quite frequently.
And I would be with my friends, and I remember we'd order. And not me, mind you, but my friends would smoke marijuana, Mitch. And I was there, but I did not,
it was just like the secondhand smoke.
Yeah, it was the secondhand smoke. And we used to put on Jimi Hendrix's Axis, Bold as Love. And I guess I got like a contact high from being close to my friends, right? So all of a sudden the paranoia would set in, and then you'd forget that you ordered the pizza. You know what I mean? And Jimmy be like, and tripping out psychedelics on all yours. Bing bong. Like, holy shit. Cops are at the door. No, we ordered pizza. Okay, you go pay him. No, you go pay him. I ain't going to pay him. I can't pay him. Anyways.
I've fallen asleep a couple of times.
You've been banned from a place?
No, not on site. I've fallen asleep, and then my phone keeps ringing because
that's
they're trying to get in. I completely forgot that I'd ordered food. You know? So... Andrew, on our way down to Lowick,
yes.
Andrew is playing what in your car? What is he playing?
Playing Tom Petty.
And what else is he playing?
He just kept on playing. Oh, and he played Alejandro Escovedo.
Yeah. What else did he play? Well, we got that coming on another podcast.
Those are the two that he kept on playing back.
Oh, he played Bob Dylan at the Montreal Forum.
Oh.
Bob Dylan bootleg series from
this
the Rolling
one's for
Thunder.
Leonard.
The Rolling Thunder review, and
if he's still here, this one's for Leonard.
There's about 4 or 5 cuts on that double CD that came out 10 years ago.
Are you playing
so.
My favorite?
Yes. You want to lead into it?
Andrew, you know, the St. Kitts Cowboy turned me on to this one. Tonight I'll be staying here with you. Rolling Thunder review.
Here. Can you hear me? I mean, that's the second cut we've played that I'm on. Montreal Forum, early December 1975. I love that Rolling Thunder review. It's just an amazing night. It was like 4 hours nonstop.
Who was in the band?
Special. In the band, you had Mick Ronson, David Bowie's guitarist at the time.
Fantastic.
And Rob Stoner on bass.
Rob Stoner.
Howie Wyeth on drums. Scarlett Rivera on the violin. I'm going to leave somebody out, I know. T-Bone Burnett was part of that band. Bobby Newirth, his longtime brother-in-arms and shit disturber, used to hang out with Dylan. He was on acoustic guitar. Ramblin' Jack Elliott was part of that. Roger McGuinn was part of that. Joni Mitchell, Ronnie Blakely, in Toronto, I know Gordon Lightfoot joined them. I'm definitely missing somebody. Robbie Robertson got up in New York at MSG when Ruben, it was called the Night of the Hurricane, benefit for Hurricane Carter. So it was just a rag. Somebody should make a movie. He was making a movie at the time, which bombed, called Ronaldo and Clara. And originally this was supposed to pay tribute to the bicentennial. It was America's birthday in 1976.
Right.
And so the idea was to have like a traveling review and playing in small towns and only letting people know the day before the day of that they were there. But while he was filming this movie and working out this movie, Sam Shepard was there to write it, the playwright and actor.
Straw Dogs?
I don't know about that. Allen Ginsberg was with him. Sam Shepard and Straw Dogs, the remake? I don't know.
Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah.
Who wrote it? Sam Shepard directed it, no?
I don't know.
Okay.
Could be right.
All right.
Could be wrong. He was in Apollo 13. He played Chuck Yeager. He died of ALS, I think, right? He was married to Jessica Lange for a long time.
Yeah.
Or maybe not officially married. But anyway, all these people were hanging out together, right? And they realized, or Dylan realized, he was sinking a lot of money into this movie that he was making. So we better move from playing places like Plymouth, Mass, and Waterbury, Connecticut, to arenas like the Montreal Forum and Maple Leaf Gardens.
Waterbury, Connecticut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a bootleg from all those early Rolling Thunder shows. And what do you know? Like less than a year later, he was on stage in The Last Waltz, which we're going to get to next. It's episode 18 of the Melnick and Murphy podcast from CNS Studios in Western NDG. Some of our
West Side.
Favorite live recordings. And we'll do a second volume of this.
I spoke falsely. Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, Sam Peckinpah. Peckinpah directed Dylan.
Straw Dogs. And he directed Ronaldo and Clara.
No. No.
Okay.
No, Sam Peckinpah did Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid with Kris Kristofferson and Dylan.
Okay.
And they were shooting in New Mexico, and it was mayhem. He was crazy.
Too much
Sam Peckinpah was crazy.
Peyote. Happens. I want peyote.
Straw
right
Dogs,
now.
Heavy duty movie.
Couldn't get through it.
Too heavy for you to get through?
I'd known through cultural osmosis about how
There's a very disturbing scene in the movie that to this day people still discuss. So I wanted to segue into The Last Waltz since we are actually recording this on American Thanksgiving. It's been 2 years. Does it seem like 2 years or longer?
Longer.
It seems longer than 2 years when we did our 40th anniversary celebration of The Last Waltz at the Corona.
And I don't know how I pulled that off.
That was a great night.
I don't know how.
It was an incredible
night. I shouldn't
say
I, but I mean for my part in it, I don't know how I pulled that
off. Well, that was the first big one that we did. We had done the Dylan birthday, but it was a benefit, and it was it inspired us to do something else, and that's why we did The Last Waltz.
Yeah, that one was intense. That one freaked me out. I was like, I don't know if we're going to pull this off. That one and the Southern Soul Review were the two that I was like, I got the list. I got the ride sheet from you, and I was like, man, this better.
You have all these songs that you can play anytime you want.
And
right?
Who knew that it would be the Tony Marinaro roast that that went long.
All the radio
we're
people.
Going over. Just do 2 or 3 minutes. Yeah, Mitch, no problem.
All the musicians can keep time, but the radio people have no clue how to keep time. So do you have a favorite, just one? You can't pick two, three, four, five. One moment from the last waltz.
Muddy Waters. Muddy Waters. For me. Yeah, just... Yeah,
and that's what you did at our version of the last waltz, is you paid tribute to the blues.
Yeah, and I think I... Yeah. For me, yeah. When he takes the stage and that... I mean, it's just the voice.
Oh, yeah. Everything gonna be all right this morning. We're gonna hear from Muddy.
Come on. Come
just
on.
Just takes you there. How many times you figure you've seen it? Like, I saw it...
Well, for me,
in preparation for the concert that we did, I saw it probably 12 times. And on the last time that I saw it, I finally recognized that Neil Diamond had his own drummer there. I'd never noticed that before. And I had probably seen it 30 times. And for the first time, I realized, hey, no wonder it doesn't sound like Levon Helm. It's not Levon Helm. He had his own drummer. Dennis St. John, I think, was his name.
So when was Last Waltz was aired when?
The Last Waltz, you mean the actual real Last Waltz?
Yeah.
It was Thanksgiving 1976.
November.
Yes, November 25th.
Okay. So he had just, Spanish Boy was a very famous Muddy Waters song, but he re-recorded it on an album. I think it's either late 40s or mid 50s where he does the original version of Spanish Boy. And then he re-recorded that. He re-recorded Spanish Boy for an album called Hard Again. Which is like a beige outline, and it's just a black and white photo of him, and it says Muddy Waters Hard Again, and Johnny Winter produced
right
that
in Woodstock
that album, yeah. But you can hear when he goes, whoa yeah, meow meow meow, oh yeah, everything gonna be all right this morning, and all you hear in the background is
yes I know yeah,
and that's Johnny Winter screaming. So for me, that was like.
Must have been a trip for Johnny Winter to produce Muddy Waters.
My God.
Huh?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So there's too many songs from The Last Waltz to play, so I figured I'd go with, in my opinion, a really underappreciated song by the band with the great Levon Helm on lead vocals from The Last Waltz, November 25th, 1976 at Winterland in San Francisco.
Thank you.
from The Last Waltz. It's funny, every time I play something from The Last Waltz, I realize that's the last time they ever played that song live. You know, it's kind of a...
In that ensemble.
Yeah. With the original band members together. Yeah. That's it. 86, 96, 06, 16, 42 years ago now, because we did the 40th anniversary. So 42 years ago, Rag Mama Rag. Well, I don't think that was in the movie. Was that in the movie? I don't remember that.
I don't remember.
That being in the movie.
They got it now, Robbie. That's another favorite moment of mine.
So we are now going to venture into...
And Neil Diamond was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. It's because Robertson.
I'm going to only play one song for you, but I'm going to make it good. It's going to be a good one. Like all the other songs were shit. You know what I mean?
Dry Your Eyes, which is about Tin Pan Alley, right? Those days in New York where Neil
Carole
Diamond
King.
And Carole King.
Neil Sedaka.
Neil Sedaka, Lou Reed. They were all writing songs in the Bill Building.
I can't picture Lou Reed writing like doo-wop.
From Long Island, yeah.
Doo-wop hits and
well,
stuff.
He had a pop sensibility about him. If you hear Pale Blue Eyes and a few other Velvet songs. Are
Heroin.
I want to get to swing into the blues and soul aspect of featuring three especially and two well-known classic albums by two of the greatest performers ever in the history of American music. We're going Sam Cooke, James Brown, Muddy Waters, and I threw the three discs in front of Shannon. I said, pick one from each. So the next three are going to be Sam Cooke from the Harlem Square Club, James Brown live at the Apollo, and live Muddy Waters.
I told you that story about my dad seeing James Brown live last time in Montreal with the outdoor show.
Was this during the Grand Prix?
Wherever the last James Brown outdoor performance
in
Montreal.
Well, you know what? The actual last scheduled James Brown show, he never...
Right. The last one
away.
He played.
Yeah.
And my dad, who stopped listening to music in 1958... You know, I remember asking him, I'm like, so what was it like being, I told the story before, but what was it like being around, you know, Jimi Hendrix? My dad was like 28 or 27 when Jimmy dropped. He's like, well, I didn't listen to that stuff. I mean, I didn't listen to that. They're all weeders. And my mom would pipe in, they were all weeders. Like Elvis never took drugs, but he went and saw it with my mom. And I remember, and I was getting into James Brown. I was playing like Jello Bars, Sofa Lounge, Wax Lounge. We're doing this. I was like getting my funk education, luckily, from a bunch of really fantastic musicians. But I remember my dad, we were talking about it. He goes, yeah, I saw that guy, James Brown. And my dad never said anything about me. He's like, that guy's good. That guy is good. That's, I don't know what... He's up there too, but that guy was really. I was like, yeah, Dad. He with the cape and jumping. Right, he guy can move. That guy can move. He's good. I was like, okay, thanks, Dad. So I was like, get my dad to say that. That's something. And James Brown must have been 65 at the time.
Yeah,
yeah. So yeah, I just remember my old man saying that.
And Sam Cooke, Sam Cooke seems like an artist Cooke, they would have.
Yeah, no, they were more into like Johnny Cash and, you know. Elvis, mm-hmm. Ricky Nelson.
Tom Jones.
Hello, Mary. No, they didn't like Tom Jones.
They didn't
Jones
like Tom Jones? What, it was too flamboyant?
Yeah, too flashy. But I mean, for me, I think Tom Jones is a fantastic singer.
I think he was a better singer than Elvis.
Okay. Okay.
More powerful than Elvis. Okay. More powerful voice than Elvis.
Okay.
I'm not saying if I had 12 hours to listen that I would listen to Tom Jones for 8 and Elvis for 4. It wouldn't be that at all.
But Elvis had that come across the screen.
Yes.
Like grab you by the throat, charisma. Like
absolutely.
Just, dripping. There was no, yeah. There's a fantastic video for all of you listening to the podcast tonight. If you want to do yourself a favor, just Google Tom Jones, Sloop John B. You ever seen that?
No. Oh, is this on his television show?
No. It's a video. Sloop John. So he does the classic Sloop John B.
Yeah, the Beach Boys.
Yeah, well, it's a traditional, but yeah. Anyways, he's wearing a captain's hat.
Oh, boy.
He's
like
wearing
the captain and Tennille?
And he's wearing, a leopard skin Speedo.
No, come on.
Oh, man. And he's on a big yacht.
see how the main share share. Can I send him this? I want to go home. Oh, well, let me go home.
And there's all these girls in bikinis. It's a trip. You never saw that video?
No, was it a promotional video?
No, it was a video. It was like 1970. And Tom's in good shape, too. I mean, he could have, you know, waxed the chest a bit. There was a bit too much fur on the, too much grass on the field for my liking.
It's like Smokey Robinson coming out with a see-through shirt on at the Jazz Fest.
Nobody needs to see the nipples. No.
All right, so Sam Cooke at the there's two great live albums. Yeah. Sam Cooke
live at the Harlem Club.
Yeah, that's the one we're gonna hear.
And then it was live at the
Copa.
The Copa, yeah, fantastic. Billy Preston's probably on B3.
So this is the
Bobby
next...
Womack's on guitar. Those were the guys who played with him.
And Sam Cooke's widow ended up marrying Bobby Womack.
Possible.
Yeah.
And who used to sing? Who sang backup on "Bring It On Home to Me"? Lou Rawls.
Oh wow! What an all-star team that was.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. And he was
sang bass.
The first African American to own his own publishing company.
Sam Cooke.
Of any note, yeah. Back then, yeah.
Fantastic. So. This is Sam Cooke, Somebody Have Mercy, James Brown, Try Me, and Muddy Waters, Champagne and Reefer, as we're on the home stretch of episode 18 of the Melnick and Murphy podcast, brought to you by Lauren Rubin of Paramount Financial Services.
And fellas, that make me feel good, just put it right back. Yeah. Somebody have mercy, tell me what is wrong with me. Oh, help me right now. Ha! Somebody have mercy, baby. I wanna know what is wrong with me. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I don't know how I stand the thing that woman do to me. Let me say it one more time. Somebody have mercy. I wanna know what is wrong with me. I don't know what it is, baby, but I feel good. Somebody have mercy. I wanna know what is wrong with me. Oh yeah. Sometimes I don't know how I stand the thing that woman do to me. But let me tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm going down to the bus station, baby, with a suitcase in my hand. Can you imagine me carrying one of them suitcases, honey? I'm going down to the bus station, baby, with a suitcase in my hand. Oh, yes, I am. I'ma grab me an armful of Greyhound and ride just as far as I can. Now, come on, blow that thing for me now. Let me tell you what I'm doing, baby. Listen to me right now. I'm standing here wondering, baby, what up? A matchbox hold my clothes. Oh, yes, I am. I said I'm standing here wondering, baby, what up? A cotton picking matchbox hold my clothes. Oh, yes, I am. I got such a long way to get there and such a short time to go. Oh, blowing my boat. Somebody somewhere, somebody somewhere, somebody, somebody have mercy. I wanna know what is wrong with me. It ain't that leukemia, that ain't it. Sometimes I don't know how. Oh yeah, let me do that one more time. Oh, somebody somewhere, somebody somewhere, somebody somewhere, somebody have mercy. Tell me what is wrong with me. Ha. Oh yeah. Sometimes I don't know how I stand the thing that woman do to me.
mercy on me. Somebody have mercy on me. Somebody have mercy on me right now. I begin to feel all right now. Lord have mercy. I said I begin to feel all right now. I feel I can tell you about my baby right now. I said I feel you in a mood for me to tell you about my baby right now. Sometimes me and my baby, we fuss and fight, and my baby leave home, cause things ain't right. Oh, but I get the feeling, so all alone, and I call my baby on the telephone. I finally get somebody on the telephone, and I say, who is this? Somebody said, this is the operator. I said, I don't want you, operator. I want my baby. Oh, operator. I want my baby. And finally, the operator get my baby on the telephone. And children, the minute I hear my baby say hello, something start to move down inside me. And I say, I got a message for you, honey. I want to tell you that, darling, you oh, you sent me. That's what I'm going to tell you, baby. Oh, you. You sent me. Oh, you. Oh, you sent me. Oh, that was. Ha ha ha. No. Ha ha. Oh. I tell her, listen here, baby.
Jam.
Thank you.
get champagne when I want to get drunk. And bring me a reaper when I want to get high. Bring me champagne when I want to get drunk. Bring me a reaper when I want to get high. Woman, when I get lonely and celebrate down here by my side. You should be allowed to people rest people because these smoke a little dope. Should be some guess that because people wanna smoke a little dope. Well, you know it's good for your head, it's good for your body. It make you relax, don't you know?
Can you imagine, man, Shane Murphy seeing Muddy Waters, James Brown? Well, James Brown was at the Apollo, but and Sam Cooke in a small club in the 60s.
No.
You know?
No, I can't. I wish I could.
Yeah. Well, there's some decent footage out there.
Yeah, it's not the same. But Who would you rather go see? Muddy Waters in a small
club? I was just going to ask you. You had a choice. No, you have a choice of Muddy Waters, Sam Cooke, James Brown, in the same club, small, classy music joint, somewhere, capacity, 150 at the most. Tonight, right now, as soon as we put the microphone down, you can only see one of them.
Sam Cooke.
Wow. Why?
I just, there's something about his lyrical content. I remember I was working with a girl from Meaford, Ontario, and I was playing, and the staff hated me because I just would play Portrait of a Legend, which was the Sam Cooke Greatest Hits anthology that I bought from Al at
Slominski,
Big Al at in Vera Mall. And was just something about, I mean, I started playing Bring It On Home to Me with my cousins, and I was like, who's that? It's like, it's the Animals. And I did some more digging and found out it was Sam Cooke. And it's just something about the lyrics, the simplicity of the lyrics, but the depth at the same time that made me think it's a different, I don't know, more romantic, or maybe it's the romantic in me, but, you know, I'll always be your slave. Until I'm dead and buried in my grave, but while I'm living, that just really struck a chord with me from a young age. So,
my favorite part of the Alley movie, you saw them,
right.
Was early that scene with Sam Cooke.
Right,
that seemed to they caught that. The rest of the movie was up and down, but that particular scenes with Sam Cooke at a club that really seemed real.
Yeah, I just for me it was just. There's something about those songs. I mean, I can just listen to it and listen to it and listen to it. And James Brown is, you know, one of the godfathers, if not the godfather, arguably of funk and changed things. There was a paradigm shift when James Brown hit and moved things. And Muddy Waters is, you know, arguably the greatest blues singer of all time and bluesman of all time. But for me, Sam Cooke, there was, you know, Chain Gang, and I mean, Change Is Gonna Come. I remember the first time I ever saw that, I ever heard that song. It was the Aliens singing at a place called the Jello Bar, which a lot of people, it's not open now, but it was a hotbed of funk and soul and R&B in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I remember Alan Prater, who's a great singer, toured with Michael Jackson as a trumpet player, and he was singing, and I remember him singing the lines, I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. And I said, man, what a line. And then I later went on to discover that it was Sam Cooke. So those type of, along with the singing and everything else, it was the lyrical content.
Just like a gorgeous singer.
You know, just very simple.
Effortless.
Effortless, but simple lines, simple lyrics,
but heavy.
Really listening to, you know.
Yeah. You know, he wrote that as a response to Blowin' in the Wind.
Right.
Sam Cooke.
Bob Dylan again. Here we go.
James Brown and Muddy Waters. I'd have to go.
Hot tub.
I think on a Friday night it would have to be Muddy Waters for me.
Yeah.
A drinking night. Drinking a little champagne and reefer watching Muddy Waters. That would be so cool.
Mitch Melnick, you don't smoke no reefer, man.
So we're going to wrap this up.
We're on the record. Don't say.
Thanks again, Alan Hodgson. Did that come out okay?
Yeah, sure.
Alan Hodgson at CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West side.
And again, a big thank you to all of the people who supported the Billy Bob Production shows in 2018. We greatly appreciate it. And as a token of appreciation, when you walk in to the Fairmont Theater on Friday, November 30th, It's a party. It's our party. It's our Christmas party, and we need you to be part of it. And we're going to put some great live music on, including Tommy Youngstein's The Best of Bruce Springsteen. And Bilal Butt's going to knock you out. The stage is going to be so hot by the time Alan Snoddy and Tommy Youngstein get on there.
All the snow will melt in Montreal.
There you go.
Hopefully.
And you get a beer. Just the tickets are $25. That includes a free beer.
We're going streaking.
And Santa Claus is going to be there. We're all going to be there, and we're all going to hang out together. It's going to be a great night. We love
Mitch
the Fairmont.
Mitch and I are going to be streaking down Park Avenue. We're going to let it all hang out.
It was a rough week.
Yes.
Randy Tiemann died suddenly a lot of people, well, especially early on when we both started our careers at about the same time. And one of the original members of Billy Bob Productions, Gary Silverman, found out his dad, who had been ill, passed away. Irving, a real mensch, great family, the Silvermans. And I found out about that the same time that I found out that Randy had passed away so suddenly. It's a shame. Randy had retired, kind of forced retirement, but he was ready to retire for several years and really didn't get a chance to enjoy retirement. It was less than a year. But there's a reason why there's been such this incredible outpouring of emotion towards Randy. I mean, I don't know if you ever met him.
I met him once.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I met him once with you. I forget where it was. And it was...
it was probably at the radio station when he came in, because he did the show before me, before Knuckles did.
It was just like... it's weird. It's like the same vibe as Ron Roosh. You know, whenever I saw Ron Roosh, I would... And whenever I see him, I know Ron now. We're buddies and friends, whatever. But I was like, you're just like you are.
Yeah.
You know, I told Ron, I never got a chance to tell Randy, but, you know, when you see someone... And whether they're on TV or they're right in front of you, it's the same person. You
know, he was so genuine.
Yeah, just shook his hand, said hey, and it was just like, wow, this is who you get. This is whether he's on TV or whether you're just talking to him, you know, for the 30 seconds that we exchange pleasantries. And
it's just not like he didn't have bad days, and I'm not talking health-wise, because I shared many a car ride with Randy. He drove me home a lot, and like everybody has issues, and you talk about them, and you get it out, but I've never been around somebody who had this incredibly positive vibe and outlook on life, and it emanated out of him, and it just, you couldn't help but feel good when Randy was around. He was just... He had that spirit about him, and it's been hard. It's been a very difficult week. So I wanna go out with a song I had mentioned earlier, which is also on the Springsteen box set, Live 1975-85, from the Nebraska album. It is Reason to Believe, and we're gonna get to it in a second. When are we gonna be able to sit here and play live, officially released Shane Murphy?
December 2019.
Oh, yeah? Oh, you're not just saying that?
No. Well, if you say that, obviously there's a doubt in your mind, but that's, yeah.
Okay.
December 2019.
I look forward to that. That's about the same time we're going to put on this killer show.
Released. I'm going to release it. Yeah. That's going to be, I give myself a little bit less than a year, but yeah.
Okay.
The video, the DVD, the guests, the whole bit.
That's cool. Looking
not
forward
DVD
to that
anymore, because people
now know. It's Blu-ray.
Well, it's not even. It's YouTube. It's not Blu-ray. This.
Do you have your own YouTube channel?
No. Too much emotional currency to upload that stuff. I got.
Thanks again, to Alan Hodgson of CNS Studios, Lorne Rubin of Paramount Financial Services.
You sound like that mob guy that Richard Pryor's talking about live on the Sunshine Shit. Come here, this kid's killing me. Richard, come on, tell me a story.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope to see you at the Fairmont Theater on Friday, November 30th. Don't miss it. Honestly, you're going to miss something special. And one more time for Randy Tiemann and Irving Silverman. This is Bruce Springsteen.
Umelu loved Johnny with a love mean and true. She said, baby, I'll work for you every day and bring my money home to you. One day up and left her, and ever since that, she waits down the end of that dirt road for young Johnny to come back. Man, it struck me kinda funny, seemed kinda funny, sir, to me, how at the end of every hard-earned day, people find some reason to believe. Take the baby to the river, Kyle William may call him. They wash the baby in the water, they take away Kyle sins. In a whitewashed shotgun shack, an old man passes away. They take his body to the graveyard, and over him they pray. Lord, now won't you tell us what does it mean? Still at the end of every hard-earned day, people find some reason to believe. Congregation gathers down by the riverside. Preacher stands with a Bible. Groom stands waiting for his bride. Congregation on the sunset's behind a weeping willow tree. Groom stands alone and watches the river rush on. So effortlessly, Lord, and he's wondering, where can his baby be? Still at the end of every hard-earned day, people find some reason to believe.